Hey, you got the morning show here on Raglan Community Radio. That's Spoon with Inside Out, and I want to welcome Crystal to the studio. Good morning.
Morena. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Now I've closed the door to stop the cold air coming in. Still a little chilly out there this morning.
Yeah, so good to see the sun, though.
Yeah. Is it bad for the chicks that are hatching that they suddenly get a cold snap? Do you know? Does that a...
No, they're pretty good tucked up in their burrows, and they got lots of downy feathers. So,
And mum and dad to keep them warm.
No mum and dad. Mum and dad are off in the ocean.
Which chicks are we talking about? The oi?
Oh, the oi chicks, yeah.
Are they both out feeding?
Yep. Yeah, so they leave the chick.
I should have learned this at some point with those conversations with you.
But yeah, yeah. Yeah, you should have, Aaron. But it's okay.
And I know that
I'm forgetful too now.
One of the changes that we're all undergoing. Sorry, that refers to a conversation we're having off the air. And I know that what I do remember is the chick's protection is to projectile vomit smelly food at anything that comes down the burrow.
So. Yeah, if they have food in their tummies, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they get a big feed and then the parent leaves and then they might not get a feed for 7 days. So that big feed nourishes them for that whole time.
Wow.
Until the next feed gets delivered.
Mm. And I know birds have like crops in their upper throat where food can be stored before it gets digested. Do they have that? Some birds have that.
No, it goes straight into their stomach.
Straight into the stomach.
Yeah.
My dad had this interesting hobby. He raised budgies when I was a kid, so I saw these little, tiny little pink blobs under nests and things like that.
Oh, yeah, cute. Yeah,
but they had the parent would feed it and it would get all this big bulge in its stomach, and not in its stomach, in its neck,
yeah,
where the food sat in the crop for a while, and then it went into the stomach.
Yeah.
Not like that with a seabird.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right, I've learned something. So last time we talked to you, you were in the middle of a fundraiser because you needed what you called a side-by-side vehicle, something to get up the back of the farms to get to the bush line and save the walking and carrying and the extra time that was taking.
Yeah.
Fundraiser, you nearly got to the target, didn't you? Like, it was pretty close.
Yeah, we set a $30,000 target, and that was just, to kind of cover our bases and all the cost potentially involved.
Yeah.
And then we got just under 28,000.
Okay.
So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And, amazing match funders, businesses, local businesses getting on board.
Yeah.
It was really exciting. And then suddenly it was over and it was like, oh, wow, we really have to sort this now.
Yeah.
But we really got a good deal from the Honda guys in Hamilton and through one of our local farmers, Mike.
Yes.
And so they bought us out a secondhand one. And to trial, and so we got that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who's allowed to drive it?
Everyone on the team that has a side-by-side, four-wheel drive training.
Okay.
Yeah, so we need to have the training before you can drive it.
Yeah, it's not exactly a flat road up there, is it?
Yeah, and it's like, you've got to do all your health and safety, obviously. But, pretty exciting because it really just allows us, increases the scope of the work that we can do in one day, but also just allows us to get volunteers up there and gear and, it's quite a significant haul up, across farmland to get to the bush line.
Yeah, and I know having been up on one of the farm behind Dreamview Farm that gets increasingly steep as you get up to the bush line.
Yeah, you still got to be careful, and we don't always drive all the way up there when it's super wet, even with four-wheel drive. It's awesome, and just had great support from local farmers to help us get a good deal, and they'll come out and service it for us on the farm, which is cool. And, it'll be just great, for expanding the scope of the work that we can do.
Yeah.
But also if we have to do work around the other side of the mountain or on private land, so it just helps with access. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Is it fun to drive?
It is quite fun to drive, yeah. I drove some volunteers up the other day and I was like, you do feel that weight of responsibility. Mm. But you just take your time and, the awesome thing is when you do the course is that the guy who's super experienced, driving four-wheel drive off-road vehicles just shows you how the capability of the vehicle as well and how we were driving along really steep edges and then he got Jasmine to tip it like it literally just tipped onto its side.
Oh, yeah.
And just showing, you know, how far you can kind of take it and like.
So it just tipped over and just was okay.
Yeah, it was just sitting. I mean, we weren't driving it at the time, but he just kind of got her to drive on this really steep bank and then it just tipped to its side and she's sitting there in the still in the vehicle. Just
oh, really?
Tipped over.
Did she know that was going to happen?
No. It was awesome. And then he just showed how easy, you know, you can also lift it back up and. I'm not saying that then you should do that, just a little disclaimer, but yeah. It just, you know, like when you do the course, it just helps you kind of figure all that out and see, you know, how
and
it
it's
works.
Good to know what that limit actually is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I remember being on my uncle's farm down near Nelson when I was a kid driving. He would drive these old Land Rovers and I was a little kid and I'd freak out because it was such a steep angle. I thought we were going to roll down the hill.
Yeah.
And he had taken the doors off. So that he could just step out if he needed to.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, but I'm presuming he was more careful with us when we were with him.
Yeah.
His little nephews.
Yeah. You definitely have to be really careful. So, but yeah, obviously there's farm tracks and places that we can easily access. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. And we were talking about the Oi before and that there's chicks out there.
Mm.
How's the count? Do you have a count for...
Oh,
how
yeah,
many actually, you've got at the moment?
Well, we're going out tomorrow. We actually had a few things have happened. Is that we had the species dog out, which I might have already talked to you about.
It's about to come, I think, last time we spoke.
Okay, so The species dog came out. So we did have we do have quite a few active burrows, around 30.
Okay.
And then the exciting thing is that we've got about 9 little penguin or little blue penguin. They used to be
really?
Burrows. Yeah, so yeah. That was really cool. So we've seen them popping up and we've fledged some chicks in the past. But I really felt like I wanted to do a really big survey of the coast. So we went all the way from Manu Bay to the south end of the beach. And there's between that area, those two areas, like all that Half Moon Bay area, and the south end of the beach, we've got little blue penguins, burrows.
Right. How, yep. And how vulnerable are they down there?
Super vulnerable.
Yeah, that's my worry.
Yeah, so the burrows for little blues, they can climb actually up to 300 metres probably, but it's amazing where you can find them. But our ones are really low on the beach, just above like the rocks or just above the beach.
Yeah.
And, yeah, really easily accessible, like holes that like little dogs especially can get into, but also pigs can dig them out.
Right.
Or big dogs that dig.
Yeah.
Because they'll get a smell of it and they smell really strong. And so dogs can sniff them out so easily. And so from we do camera work like 24/7, you know, infrared camera. So we can see what's going on around burrows and what predators come by. So we've had a pretty couple of really bad incidents where dogs that have been on the loose have got into burrows. Mm. We've had several adults birds attacked, and we just had a post-mortem come back. Is that what it's called? Post-mortem?
After it died?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just wondering if I got my words right. Yeah, so that's kind of like – it was really sad to read the report actually because it was just broken everything and internal damage. –
How big
the
are
bird
they?
Had just how been big, smashed.
How big was the bird?
So the bird's like probably, like I always say, the size of a skinny chicken, but with a wingspan of a meter.
Yeah, I'm just thinking though, I've seen dogs when they're playing, they like, a lot of them, they'll shake something really vigorously.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Which is, the purpose is obvious what that's for. But, yeah. So I'm not surprised to hear that.
Yeah, so we had young birds. We suspect that, so the attack happened around burrows, but... around Bryant Reserve, but what we think might have happened is that younger birds have come in and they got smashed by the dog, and the dog didn't get the parents of the chick in the burrow.
Yeah,
from what we can see so far. But yeah, just really gutted that dogs are basically on the loose at night, and so we have been able to contact some landowners, which is awesome, and they've been really supportive about trying to manage this. But what we're also seeing is lots of dogs, like down Bryant Reserve and at south end of the beach, there's actually a sign from council up saying dogs on the lead if you go south, dog can be off the lead if you go north.
Yeah.
And towards like Rere Kiriopa Drive.
Yeah.
So we're really kind of wanting to put a call out to the community to respect that southern end. That's where the burrows are. And the parents of little penguins come in every morning and every night. come in and out to feed chicks and go back to the sea.
Yeah.
So, and it's just so special that these birds are coming back. Like, you know, despite the losses, we're still seeing this more birds come back, more seabirds, and they're literally competing with our, you know, beach going kind of, you know, and residents that live around there and saying, hey, this is our home too. And, you know, please look after us. And so we, that's the kind of message we want to get out. It's like, hey, it's a small thing. Put your dog on a lead, get down to the beach, walk north. Mm. And then, you know, like after you get to the like life-saving kind of, you know, well, I was going to say tower, but it's not
where
there
it
anymore.
Used to be.
The yeah. toilets and changing room. Yeah. Then like have them off the lead there and make sure your dog's fully under control, you know, as you yeah. know, like so.
Or take a walk from down the other end of the beach by,
yeah.
At the end of Rere Memorial Drive.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's been a little bit of carnage. And then we also had last week a stoat get into one of the burrows and kill the chick.
For the penguin?
No, the petrel chick. Okay. Yeah, oi chick. So,
but you said you had 30 active burrows. Is that a record? That seems like a heap
no,
of a lot.
No, we're monitoring up to 50
okay.
now.
Okay.
Yeah, which is incredible compared to 8 years ago. We knew of about half a dozen. And so there's more and more popping up and more birds coming back and staying. And that'll be because there's less predators around. But then occasionally we still just get a random stoat come in. They catch this, you know, the smell and they get into the burrow. So it's just like so annoying, so devastating when it happens. And we have burrow buddies that get really attached and they have to watch this video footage and then see the carnage, which is a bit traumatic. So
someone has to monitor it.
Yeah, like yeah. yeah, and there's a whole bunch of us that do that work, and there's months and months of investment of time and effort into that. So kind of like really positive story, like just so delighted that these birds are coming back and they're hanging in there. But we really feel like we're at a point now where we've pivoted things so much, but we really need to get people on board around that dog control and these other bigger predators that we don't really think about, because we talk about predator free being rats and stoats, you know, mustelids and possums, but actually it's also cats and dogs and pigs and ungulates, even like hoofed animals, you know, that are also impacting our ecosystems.
Yeah.
And we do also need to manage those.
Just damaging it.
Yeah, just damages.
Well, pigs are famous for damaging stuff, aren't they?
Yeah, and a few pigs in a big area is not a big deal. But when you get them on the coast, they just completely destroy the habitat. And then all the weeds come in and the birds just don't come back. Or they just it's too much damage of the you know, the area, the habitat. So, yeah, so there's still some big problems, but we do find that there's incredible support, and when we get a chance to talk to people, they really get it. So I'm just really encouraged, I guess, by the response we're getting, the local farmers, local landowners, people with those bush blocks and areas. You know, like a lot of our seabird stuff on the coast is supported by landowners, private landowners.
Yeah.
Some of them are literally under people's, you know, sparples and decks.
Yeah, you've said that in the past. You found
yeah.
That, yeah.
So, you know, so it really requires them to get on board, and they are. And so we're definitely going to be probably a little bit more outspoken, I guess, about some of these things, because it's such an easy thing to do. Putting your dog on a lead, you know, keeping your cat inside at night. It's not a big deal. It's just common practice in many areas, and that helps us kind of live hand in hand with wildlife.
All right. Now, the other thing you've got going on, something about the Matuku.
Yeah, Matuku Hiripo.
Yeah.
So that's the it's a wetland bittern.
What type of bird is a bittern? Because I hear that name.
Yeah, like I need to pull my notes out now.
Okay. Oh, you're going to show me. You're going to show me a photo.
Yeah, I was going to show you a photo. So
we can't put that through the microphone.
No. So it's a threatened species, nationally critical. I'll show you the photo, and I didn't realize
it's a bit like a little weka.
Yeah,
for want of a better comparison,
but
not exactly.
Not,
but
it's not little; it's like half a meter high.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, and so I always used to look at this picture myself and go, "Oh yeah, that's kind of cool." But
cute
look
little
at
thing.
Huge legs. But then I saw a stuffed one that Doc has, you know, in the little box.
Yeah.
And it's like up to there and it's got this huge legs and beak and it's so amazing. And we have this in Raglan, like in Whangaroa and at Torapuru Wetland and wetland areas just outside of town. So so it's just so cool. And it's, you know, critically...
I noticed it's the Australasian bittern.
Yeah.
Do they fly over? How do they get here?
Yeah, so they fly. Well, I'm not too sure how they
got
here.
Must be like
here.
Storms and things. So it's that sort of...
Yeah, so they're also in Australia and New Caledonia.
Okay.
So they are native, and there's probably only, well, it says nationally critical, and they, you know, you hardly see them, but given that you hardly see them, there's maybe only about 1,000 left in the country. Mm. They're just trying to do surveys at the moment that we're part of.
Right.
It's amazing how many we've already spotted in this, you know, our area. And so we're really trying to – we're doing a workshop in the school telling all the kids about it. So all our junior classes are getting like a species workshop about the Matuku. And then we're also doing surveys. So we just did the first ones for 3 nights in a row last weekend. And then next month we're doing another one. And this survey is happening all around the north of the North Island and the West Coast, like from different community groups.
So are you out all night? How long are you out for?
No, so it's just in half an hour or so before dark and after dark.
Probably quite hard and to then, see them when it's dark, isn't it? That was a stupid
yeah,
question.
Yeah, so you can't see them. But the reason why we're doing it in the next 3 months is because it's breeding season and the male booms. And I can't do the boom for you if you're going to ask. I can see that look in your eyes.
I can't do photos, but we can do.
But it's so cool. And they do this boom. Sometimes they boom 5 times. And yeah. Then, yeah, see if you can play it. It's so cool. So what we're listening out to is the boom that the male uses to attract mates.
Can you hear that? Oh, no, you can't hear it.
No.
We're not getting any booms at the moment. We're just getting running water. Let's go back to the start. It's there. Although that seems to be one in Britain, but
yeah, well, that's exactly the same. Yeah.
Right.
So they have a bit more footage of the British one. Even there's a woman who's called Wendy, and she's been travelling around the country raising awareness because she just absolutely loves these Matuku Hiripo and. She's got this cool van with the bird, like, on
okay,
it.
Okay, yeah.
So you might have seen her driving around. She was staying in Raglan last week. But she's raising awareness and got community groups like ours up and going. But then we're also working at Torapuru with the Matuku Hiripo Trust. Like, so Torapuru Hiripo Trust, sorry. Yeah, like they're really important for our local iwi as well, as it, you know.
I'm kind of fascinated that they've got them on the other side of the world and they sound pretty similar.
I know.
If not identical.
It's fascinating, eh, with
they've
birds.
Got around, but now they're challenged, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. So hugely threatened because wetlands are their preferred habitat and they also need clear water, so unpolluted waterway. And fish and the species, you know, to fish show. Often they link to good white baiting habitat.
Okay,
so the Whangamarino yes. wetland is one of their major sites.
Mm.
But you can also find them out Wainaro Way, out here so to the south of Karioi. And then they go in around the edges and fish. And so often, you know, when the white bait are running, you'll find them there.
Right.
So
filling up.
Yeah, filling up and fishing and eating, you know, insects and all sorts of other things as well.
So where do they nest? Like how vulnerable are they when they're nesting?
So they need that habitat, the swampy kind of rushes, and you know, like, and yeah. So they need that wetland area to breed, and then they create nests. But there's been very little work done on their nesting sites because they're so hard to find.
Yeah, for starters, but they are camouflaged with the reeds anyway.
Yeah, so they yeah. really camouflage, and then when they freeze or when they feel they're in danger, they freeze and they stand in a way that they completely blend in with their feathers from the rushes and that. And then, you know, if they're really threatened, they will fly off. But yeah, like so, and then they yeah, so and their nests will be really vulnerable to predation as well.
Yeah. So when you're counting them, you're just listening for booms.
Yeah, listening for booms or visually picking them up. So we had.
I'm just thinking that trying to pick them up visually is obviously going to be pretty challenging.
Yeah, I'll show you a photo. I'll find a photo because there's one that someone got locally.
So it is possible. Cool. I was just thinking how difficult. I know I'm looking at a screen grab of a video just on the computer at the moment. But that bittern's gone and sat on top of something and it's fairly easy to see. I imagine when it's down in amongst the reeds, it would be incredibly difficult.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's but in saying that, like numerous people saw them last weekend.
Okay.
So
you had a good team out, did you?
Yeah, we had probably about 10 or 15 people out.
Okay. So if someone
in different spots.
Someone wants to join the next one, when is that and how do they do that?
So it's next month. I'll have to look it up. If you go on our website, you'll see the dates. But just contact us and we can tell you in a place where you can go. So what we're trying to do is connect people to a local site that's nearby where they're interested in it. And so they can just go there and sit for an hour and listen out and look out. And so it could be just that you don't hear anything, but not hearing anything is also valuable because then when, you know, like it's about the presence absence of the species.
Yes, data.
So, you know, you can have a site that looks really promising, but you might not see them. And you might have a site that looks, you know, really bad. And then you're like, oh my gosh, there's one there. So it's really, they really use those edges between farmland and wetlands. But because so many of our wetlands have been drained, there's just like all these small bits of habitat that they're having to utilize.
And they're still doing that in the Hauraki Plains area, I heard.
Yeah.
Last time I talked to someone who was concerned about it, it might have been Bruno, talking to Bruno about it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Wendy was like really enthusiastically saying like if you protect a habitat and if there is a small remnant space, like it's amazing, they'll still find it and they'll still visit. So, yeah, like that whole area around our kind of wetland edges between that kind of saltwater and freshwater marshes.
Would Arara be any good here by the rugby grounds, or is it just too small and too urban?
No, it's definitely not too small or urban. It's just like whether there's enough kind of running freshwater and food availability. But it's definitely got potential. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I know they've had trouble controlling the gate for some reason. I can't remember why. Talking to people from council, they weren't quite getting the timing for things correct. So there was a bit of too much seawater flooding back into it at one point.
Mm.
So I don't know. I don't know where that's at. I just remember that about a year ago that was considered to be an issue.
No, it's pretty exciting. So there's a couple. Yeah, so there's about mid next month that we're still going to be surveying and then in November as well. So October and November.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. So really just a cool thing to be involved in, and especially if you're a bird nerd. Like some people are.
Yeah,
cool thing.
Mark, you're out there. We know you're there.
Yeah, Mark's Mark's out there all the time.
Yeah, all good. I know one of my daughters is too, but she's over in the Bay Plenty at the moment. So
yeah.
There was a time she would have been out there as well.
Yeah, hopefully she'll come back.
Yeah, hopefully she was here last weekend, but not for that purpose. Okay, so shall we wrap things up then? You got any other messages you want to put out?
No, that's
the main one.
Yeah, no, just if people, we've had some bait ops, really great support for our bait ops last couple of weeks. So if anyone's keen to volunteer, even just for a one-off or do a trap line, please do connect. Always happy to take on more volunteers. We always have more work for people to do. And then we've got some more bait up days in a couple of weeks' time in October. So
okay, and then just look up the Karioi Project online, whatever your favourite way is.
Yeah, you can either go to our Facebook or Instagram, but also, just for dates for events, we're trying to be really good about updating those. And if you go to our website, events like karioi.org.nz or whatever it is the websites say these days, if you just go to events, it's all there.
Okay, thanks for coming in, Crystal.